Welcome to Cancer Out Loud, the Cancer Care Podcast, a show featuring conversations with people living with cancer, caregivers, survivors, loved ones, and the bereaved. Hosted by oncology social workers, Cancer Out Loud takes a closer look at the cancer experience using the power of storytelling. Whether you are a patient, survivor, caregiver, someone that lost a loved one, or someone hoping to find inspiration, Cancer Out Loud is your sanctuary, a place to find hope, understanding, and a sense of community. This podcast is produced by Cancer Care, the leading national nonprofit organization providing free professional support services to anyone affected by cancer. Facing cancer comes with many challenges, but finding the right treatment shouldn't be one. Welcome to Cancer Care's My Trialist, your free online guide to understanding and finding clinical trials tailored to your needs. Developed through conversations with healthcare experts and insights from those who've been there, My Trialist simplifies the complex world of clinical trials. It's a resource designed to empower you with knowledge and options. Here, you can easily navigate through trial options, learn from the experiences of others, and perhaps see a new horizon in your treatment experience. My Trialist is about offering hope and support every step of the way. Discover more about clinical trials that could be right for you or your loved one. Begin your informed search today. Because at My Trialist, we believe in empowering your journey with hope and knowledge. Welcome back to Cancer Out Loud, the Cancer Care Podcast. My name is Sarah Paul, and I'm the Senior Director of Social Work and your host today. This is a special two-part episode highlighting Ira's story and his experience with stomach cancer. Ira, welcome to Cancer Out Loud. It's great to have you.
It's great to be here, Sarah, and to partake in the podcast.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
It's actually coming up to a two-year mark in the end of April, beginning of May. I was diagnosed back almost two full years ago. And wow. It's been a journey, to say the least, over the last approximately 22 months.
And what happened leading up to your diagnosis? Take us back to almost 2 years ago.
Well, the story starts for me almost 2 years ago. I was down in Florida working remotely. My father had passed away. I was clearing up the condo where him and my mom had lived. And it was a very depressing part of my life, going through a lot of bereavement issues at that time. I'd already undergone or took, I should say, the COVID vaccines. I took one in August of 2021, and I took the second vaccine in September 2021. And then around Thanksgiving time of 2021, I wasn't feeling well. And there was another variant of COVID virus going around, especially, I think, in Florida. And I thought I had COVID, so I got tested, and it was negative. And then shortly afterwards, I started feeling somewhat better. And eventually, I finished what I needed to do down in Florida, and I came back to New York in the middle of February of 2022. And I had a lot of goals at the time of what I was going to do professionally and personally. And near the end of March, I went and got my COVID vaccine booster. But as I was getting back to New York City life, I didn't feel well. For example, I go back on the subways. I had been on the subways for quite some time. I would go up staircases, and I was really out of breath. And I knew I wasn't in the greatest shape, but I felt I wasn't that out of shape, you know. And then I'd be walking in Manhattan and walking up streets that had an incline and out of breath. I eventually went back to my job, the office, and we had moved to different floors in the building. And of course, there were elevators between the floors, but there was also a staircase. And I remember going up the staircase for the first time between floors, and I was out of breath. So eventually, I decided to go see my primary care physician, who I had seen in quite some time. And I went to see him in early April of 2022, told him how I was feeling, what was going on. He ran a lot of different exams, blood work, urinalysis. I think I even got a chest x-ray at the time. And the following day, he calls me up and tells me, Ira, you have anemia. Your hemoglobin level is a lot lower than it was when I last saw you. And that was like over a year ago. It was a long while ago. And he wanted me to go and get a colonoscopy and an endoscopy. So after finding a GI doctor that was in network with my health insurance for my job, on April 15th, on the Upper East Side of Manhattan, I went and got both procedures done. And when I woke up, the GI doctors basically said the colonoscopy was fine, no concerns there, but she had concerns with the endoscopy. She saw things there that she said was signs of cancer and endocarcinoma, I think that's what she said. And she started asking me if I had any family history of esophageal cancer, because at that point they thought I had esophageal cancer. I said no. She asked if I had incidence of acid reflux. I said no. She asked me if I was a smoker. I said the last time I smoked a cigarette was in March of 2006, and I was able to remember the exact moment when I had my last puff, and I really wasn't a smoker. I would just puff every once in a while, not inhale when I was nervous or whatever. So she basically said, we're going to run some biopsy tests, and we'll let you know the following week. The following week, I think it was the 18th or the 19th, the results came in. I spoke to her, and she said I had cancer, and at that point, they thought it was esophageal cancer, and I just couldn't believe it. I was hoping like, oh, what she saw in the endoscopy exam was, you know, just something there that she was concerned about, and she was just taking the proper precautions with the extra biopsy and so on, but my whole world basically fell apart at that point in time, and I remember that week, earlier that week, I was supposed to have an evaluation done between myself and my immediate supervisor, my director of the program that I work at. And I had already done my self-evaluation, and she did the evaluation of me, and we were supposed to talk about it. And I remember writing back to her, emailing her and saying, I just got the results of the biopsy. I spoke to a GI doctor, and this is what's happening right now. And she wrote back to me and said, I just want to talk to you about that, Ira. I don't want to talk to you about the evaluation. And during my conversation with my director, he asked me if I wanted to be connected to Cancer Care. It was one of many organizations that we work with for my job.
Great. I'm glad that you had the support of your director, and I'm really glad that she connected you to Cancer Care. So what kind of tests did you have to do after a meeting with your GI doctor?
Well, over the next few weeks, there was an endoscopic ultrasound test done at a hospital in Manhattan. And the reason why I went to that hospital and continued to go to the hospital regarding my cancer treatment was due mainly because my PCP was affiliated with this hospital. So it started off with the endoscopic ultrasound. For the most part, that basically confirmed what the biopsy results showed that the GI doctor and I spoke about. Then there was a CAT scan done. And then subsequently a PET scan was done. And, you know, I get these results in, I'm looking them over and so on, talking to the GI doctor. And there was another doctor that I spoke to, I think briefly, who did the endoscopy ultrasound. And then at the beginning of May, I had two appointments scheduled back to back at the hospital in Manhattan. One was to see the surgeon. And later on that day, I saw the oncologist.
What was that first visit with the surgeon like?
First visit was that he basically summarized, went over the results of, you know, all these exams. You know, he had reviewed them and so on. He told me, you know, I didn't even know there was a stage zero for cancers. He put me down at stage three. He basically told me that, to paraphrase what he was saying, a gastric cancer. Approximately 80% of the cancer was in the upper part of the stomach, and the remaining part was in the lower part of the esophagus. And it was in the walls of the upper part of the stomach. And he also told me that the cancer was the size of a golf ball. And he also told me that this is probably had started like approximately a year before. He also said that there had to be chemotherapy done. There was a possibility of radiation that would be done, but he wasn't sure about that. There would be chemo done to decrease the tumor. And then they would do surgery. At that point, it was my understanding that they would take out part of the stomach. And one of my first questions to him was, well, if you know where it is and you know what the stage is, stage three, why can't you just take it out now? And he basically said it doesn't work that way. Hopefully the chemo worked as far as decreasing it, preventing it from spreading, and then there would be more chemo afterwards. And I remember leaving his office, and I had to go to another building because the hospital had a lot of different sites and buildings to see the oncologist. I remember walking over there and just bawling, crying. And, you know, I just couldn't believe this was happening. And then I saw the oncologist for the first time, and based on her reviews of the endoscopic ultrasound and the CAT scan and PET scan at stage two, possibly three. And she was giving me different plans as far as chemo was concerned on how I could go about doing it. She wasn't saying anything about radiation at that point in time and how it would go about different types of chemo, and chemo would be like every other week. But after the chemo for the whole day, I'd have to have a pump put in me for another like 24 hours, then have it taken out the following day. And it was very overwhelming. Very overwhelming. And I basically said, can you just put all this in writing? I'll get back to you and, you know, I'll look it all over and decide what I'm going to do. And she basically agreed and so on, but she didn't want too much time to go by. And I also had to go and get a port. I was told I would have to get a port put in me in order for the chemo to be put in and all that. So I was really taken back about regarding all this stuff. I had to get myself together and decide what I was going to do. I knew I couldn't like ponder it. I knew I had to make a decision sooner than later, and which I did.
And so what happened right before you were scheduled to start the chemo?
I got back to the oncologist at her office, and we decided that we were going to get the port put in on May 17th. And later that day, have the first chemo session done. The plan was to do four every other week, including the pump, and then get scans done to see if it worked, and then move on thereafter. On May 15th, at a hotel that I was staying at temporarily in Manhattan, I got up. I was feeling okay for the most part. I went to take a shower, and I started feeling somewhat dizzy. Like every time I bent over, like to wash my feet and got up, you know, I wasn't feeling well. Got out of the shower, walked over and sat down on a chair, and I something just came over me. I felt really dizzy. I was like getting really scared. I should have just sat there and let it pass, but I didn't. I got up, started walking around the bed to call downstairs because my phone was not working or was being charged. I can't remember. And boom, I fell right down on my butt. And the feeling that I had, the dizziness, like I'm going to faint and everything, went away. But my foot, my leg, especially my foot was bent. I broke it. And people had to come upstairs, call the ambulance, break the door down. And I was taken to another hospital in downtown Manhattan. And I went there. They had to set the leg. I was in the emergency room for hours, and I was admitted. Instead of going to get the port put in on a couple of days later, on May 17th, and get the first chemo done, I had surgery on that day for the leg. And it was successful, but I was still in some pain. And I ended up staying there for about 2 weeks. I ended up staying there for 2 weeks because they were trying to find a subacute rehab place for me to go to because it wasn't conducive for me to go home and so on. And while I was there, my hemoglobin level dropped even more. It was a battle to get to one of the chief doctors who was overseeing my care there to give me a transfusion. Occupational therapist came in. Mobility instructor came in. I was just too weak to do anything. You know, sitting on the side of the bed, I couldn't even use the bathroom myself. They had to bring a commode in. They had to get me on the commode and clean me up afterwards. I was too weak to even do anything like that. I spoke to my director. I remember telling people if I didn't have bad luck, I don't think I'd have any luck at that time. And I was really feeling out of it. Finally, I got a blood transfusion actually before the surgery, my first ever in my life.
What an experience to get a blood transfusion, then to have surgery to fix your leg. And I know you were in the hospital for 2 weeks. Approximately how long were you in the rehab? I know you mentioned needing to be transferred to a subacute rehab. How long were you there?
I was there for a month. And while I was there, I started chemo. I got transport. Actually, I from there, I went to the city and got the port put in, then came back. And then I started chemo. So I started chemo approximately two and a half weeks. Actually, let's see, So I was supposed to start on May 17th. I didn't start until the beginning of June, like the first full week of June, from the 7th or the 8th, if I remember correctly. So I started approximately 3 weeks after the date I was supposed to start.
Before we talk about the chemo and the side effects, let's talk about the emotional side of your diagnosis. In earlier conversations, you shared having a mix of feelings like despair, but also a fighting spirit. So what was that like?
Well, during my time in rehab, the approximately 4 weeks I was there, 4.5 weeks I was there, there were two Iras battling it out, basically. There was the one Ira who was very depressed, upset, crying. You know, I was still dealing with bereavement issues. I had planned to go into counseling once I got back from Florida to deal with bereavement issues regarding my father's passing. And a lot of things that were unresolved regarding my mom's passing had come back. And I was very depressed. And I was thinking of about a lot of people, family and friends that I knew throughout my years who were diagnosed with other types of cancer or other serious, severe medical conditions at a much younger age, and they didn't make it. And I would say to myself, what's so special about you, Ira, that you're going to make it and they didn't? So I was going through that. And then there was the other Ira who was the much stronger Ira who was like, it's not in my DNA to give up. My parents raised a fighter. I'm going to kick cancer's butt. You know, I'm not giving up at all. I'm going to fight this. I'm going to see the light at the end of the tunnel. It's not going to take me down without a good fight. I'm going to beat this. Maybe I won't beat it, but at least I know that I gave it everything I had. It'd be the biggest fight I ever had in my life, but I'm going to do that. And it was two Iras battling it out. And it was almost like, it wasn't like 24/7, but it was almost like a daily basis. And at one point going forward, the stronger Ira took over. I mean, the other Ira was still there. It's, you know, it's comes and goes still every once in a while, but the stronger Ira took over, and that's the Ira that prevailed. And it's what I've heard is like it's somewhat common. Frankly, there's nothing wrong with that you have two sides there. I can't compare myself to others. I'm going through this now. It's my battle, and I'm going to do whatever it takes to win this battle and take down cancer.
I'm glad you didn't give up, because I know there were so many different things that threw a lot of wrenches into what was going on, especially breaking your leg. So I know you mentioned being able to have two chemo treatments while you were in the rehab.
Unlike what was supposed to take place on May 17th, if I didn't fall down and break my leg, I went to get my port put in on a separate day. My wife came to the rehab and we went together in this van service that the rehab uses and so on. So I got the port put in. It was a simple procedure. I was in and out for approximately an hour. And at the beginning, and even like during the following few months, I would look at it. It kind of like freaked me out. It's like the size of a quarter, but I've gotten used to it and so on. But yeah, I really didn't know what to expect. You know, you read about chemo and the side effects and everything. And I went for the first session. And in the waiting room, before I got called in, you know, for to see the oncologist or before the blood work or before going in for the chemo, I would be in the reception area. And all these different people there, young people, people older than me, people younger than me, Caucasians, African-Americans, Latino, Asians, males, females. And I realized it hits everyone. No one's immune from this. And I got blood work done. Then I met with the oncologist and nurse practitioner, and we went over the results and we talked about the chemo and everything and what to expect. And I really know what to expect, but I can tell you this, a few things. One, going through the chemo, of course, I had my stomach at the time. Going through the chemo, it's not bad. You're sitting there. They give you the anti-nausea medication that goes in you for about 20 minutes or so. You're sitting there, you're watching TV, you have your cell phone, you can drink ginger ale, eat some chips and so on, you fall asleep. It's what happens like 24 hours later. It's the side effects that kick in. And it's good that this chemo was every other week, because I wouldn't be able to handle it every week, because it takes about a week to get through the side effects and get ready for the next treatments and so on. I never threw up for some reason, but I felt nauseous. I felt nauseous. I felt extremely tired, more tired than just like, oh, I worked a lot the day before and I only slept three hours and I'm working again. This was like a really bad tired. And the neuropathy started kicking in. Never had neuropathy my whole life. And the fingers and the feet, the tingling sessions and so on. Even when I drank a cup of water, I'd have this I describe it as a metallic taste in my mouth. I would have bouts of diarrhea. You know, let me back up. The second session was actually the side effects were worse. But before I get to that, so I have the first session, the side effects kick in, and then there's the pump still in me, right, for another 24 hours. So instead of going, the first time, instead of going back to the hospital, staff at the rehab took it out. They were able to take it out and everything in the following session. But the second session, it was like, okay, I got through the first session. It was really bad, the side effects. It actually gets worse. It doesn't get better for some reason. I don't know why it gets worse. And it was that session or a subsequent session in July where I'm like lying there and I'm like rubbing my face and hair is coming out. I'm like being able to pull out hair from my bed. And so I had a pretty big bed. And I was like, what's going on here? And I remember one night thereafter at rehab, I remember going into the shower and sitting there on like a wheelchair type device in the shower and the nurse's aide was there. And I remember washing my hair, bending over and washing my hair with the shampoo that they had, the conditioner and so on. And clumps of my beautiful red afro came out and I just started crying. I was like, I was looking at my hands and this beautiful red afro was coming out and I started losing a lot of hair and so on and all that. But just a couple of things in rehab at the beginning, I was still very weak. Eventually, I was getting stronger. I was doing occupational therapy in another part of that building. I was doing mobility instruction. Sometimes if I wasn't feeling well, they'd come to the room and I'd do certain exercises and I was getting stronger. Eventually, I was able to take my walker into the bathroom because I had my own room and use the toilet myself and so on without the assistance of anyone and everything over that 4 to 5 week period. But the chemo really got me and it really made me exhausted. Digestive problems started kicking in and so on.
At what point were you able to leave the rehab?
I left the rehab before July 4th weekend. What happened was, I already have two chemos under my belt. And then I went back to see the orthopedist at the other hospital to do the x-ray. I think it was June 30th. And it looked good and everything. And prior to that, I was talking to the social work staff at the rehab and some other people there. And they were like, okay, how much longer do you need to stay, Ira? Are you getting better? We have to look at, contact the insurance for you to stay a little longer and all that stuff. And I decided that, if this x-ray comes back fine, then I'm out of here. There's no reason for me to be here anymore. Because I was there. I wasn't there because of the cancer so much. I was there because the leg was broken and everything. But, I was getting the occupational therapy, getting the mobility instruction. And they also got me a nice walker also before I left. I left, I think it was that Friday, right before July 4th weekend, and I had another chemo session scheduled for July 5th, the following Tuesday. And I remember my wife picking me up, and I was like, I just needed to leave, I felt if I didn't leave at that time, Sarah, I was like, never going to leave. I'm being sarcastic. Yeah.
I know.
I just needed to get out of there and so on. And they gave me prescriptions for medications and we had to go to the pharmacy. But I was tired. I was tired emotionally and physically. And I tell you, a lot of what you go through with having cancer is the emotional and mental drain. Sometimes that can be worse than the physical. It's very emotional, but you realize at some point you're actually becoming strong. You think that you're not becoming strong. You think you're becoming weaker emotionally, mentally, physically, but it clicks in at some point that you're becoming a lot stronger. And I think that's the way it is for most people that unfortunately have to go through this horrific experience in their lifetimes, regardless of what age they're at and so on. And then I went for two more chemos on the 5th, and then I think the next one was on the 19th. And as far as the pump is concerned, I actually went back to the hospital. I wasn't going to take it out myself. So I went back, they took it out and everything. And the side effects were still coming there, after third and fourth chemos. And at one point, I had lost so much hair that I went to a barber and said, take the rest of it off. And actually, I looked pretty damn good being bald. I was taking pictures, selfies, and sending it to family and friends and so on. And then eventually I had to go back and get another CAT scan. I had the second chemo and the pump and everything. That was like on approximately 20th of July. So about a week or so later, I had to go back and get a CAT scan. I really wanted a PET scan because I thought that was the more thorough scan when I took that a few months earlier and everything before I met the surgeon and the oncologist for the first time. But the insurance wasn't going to cover it. And I got the CAT scan done with IV contrast, covered the abdomen, pelvis, and the chest areas. Then I went to see the surgeon again. And he said there was some good news. It decreased it. It decreased that gout ball by a lot. It didn't spread. And he wanted to do surgery. He wanted to set up surgeries for some time, you know, about the beginning, middle of September of 2022. And he was explaining what the surgery would include. And then after the surgery, not right away, but I'd go and have four more chemo sessions, cycles, and so on. But it was good. It was good news and everything. So we were talking about it. And I remember like half joking around, half serious. Said to me, "You never lost a patient, you know." And he said, "No, no, no." And I was like, "Well, you know, I hope I'm not the first one." And we shook hands and everything. But prior to that, he was telling me what the procedure was, that I'd have the stomach removed. He was talking about the whole stomach now. And later on, I remembered him saying something about a part of the stomach being removed back in May. He's talking about the whole stomach being removed and that I'd stay in the hospital for a few days thereafter. They wanted to make sure that when they put the intestine into the bottom part of the esophagus, that it didn't break. There was no leakage and so on. I got a little worried about that. And he was telling me that's a precaution, that he was telling me the chances of it happening are very, very small and everything. There's people there that come in, they'll be monitoring you. Because I was worried, like, what happens in the middle of the night? What happens if I'm sleeping, you know? So he was like, "Okay, I'm going to set you up with the schedule and decide on a date and go from there."
And I know, you know, going back to kind of being shocked, not shocked about the surgery, but really understanding what the surgery would be like brought up a lot of emotions for you, a lot of feelings. So even after it was tentatively scheduled for the second week of September, how did you feel about that surgery when you had it, when you had a second to digest what was happening? How did you feel?
Actually, let me back up a moment. After we left the room, someone else came in to talk to me. I think it was a nurse or nurse practitioner. And I started thinking about different things about surgery. And after that, I had like this delayed reaction regarding certain things. And I started doing some research, basically. For one thing was like, because one, he told me it was going to be a partial removal, not a full removal. And then I started doing more research about like, what would my life be after a surgery of this magnitude? And it's like dumping syndromes and digestive issues. And some people can't keep anything down and they have these tubes in them or these nutrition packs inserted in them. They lose a lot of weight. We're not talking about 5 or 10 pounds, they lose a lot of weight. I started getting scared. It's like I'm thinking to myself, is this surgery, whether it's partial or full removal, going to benefit me? What's my quality of life going to be like? Is it just going to give me like another, I kept thinking, is it just going to give me like another 6 months or even 9 months or whatever? And quality of life going to be like, is it really worth it and so on? And I had some reservations and so on. And then it was a matter of reaching out to him and talking to him about this. And there was some difficulties, which I'm not going to get into, with one of his assistants and things of that nature. Eventually, I did speak to him and I met with him. And actually, prior to meeting him again in October, so the September was canceled because of my concerns and my reservations and so on. And I reached out to the oncologist also. And she said, "Okay, Ira, we wanted to do four more after the surgery, but if you want to do like one now, let's do one now and then have the surgery." And then I did one. And of course, the side effects were there again. And there were, I think it was at that time also might have been even after the second one when my potassium was low. So they had to give me potassium also, in addition to the anti-nausea medications before the actual chemo started. So eventually I took two more chemos in August. Then it turns out that the oncologist and the surgeon spoke. It was like, okay, let him have all eight, and then we'll do the surgery during the latter part of the year and so on. The chemo was finished, you know, with the pump in the middle of October of 2022. And then I was scheduled to have another CAT scan to see if the four additional sessions decreased it. And it did. It decreased it some more. I spoke with the oncologist. And I also then met with the surgeon, and he said it looked good. It decreased it, but it was never actually ever going to like get rid of it completely, you know? And if it did, it could always come back. So I meet with him again, and this time, you know, this meeting was a lot better. And this was in about November of 2022. And he's telling me he's retiring. He's going to have me meet a new surgeon at the hospital. Even though this CAT scan showed that it decreased some more, he wants me to go back and get another endoscopy ultrasound. I said, fine, I'll get it done.
So it sounds like there was some back and forth with your medical team and then also some concerns about the surgery. Did you ever consider getting a second opinion?
Yes, I did. Actually, prior to, if I remember the timeline correctly, prior to seeing the surgeon in about November, I was already in the process of having my record sent over to another major hospital in New York City. And after meeting with the surgeon, I think it was before I actually got the endoscopy ultrasound, I met with a surgeon at another hospital, and he had gotten a chance to review all the records and the scans and so on. And he also explained to me why I needed a total stomach removal as opposed to a partial stomach removal, why it would be better to get a total removal and so on. And I told him, thank you. And I'll get back, you know, decide whether I want to have it done at this hospital or at the hospital I've been, you know, affiliated with for the last several months. And I decided eventually to stay with the first hospital, mainly because I really liked the oncologist. And there was a chemistry there. I felt connected to her. And that was the real reason why I stayed. And, you know, a lot of other good people there, but I stayed because of her. I don't think I ever told her that. Actually, I never told her that I went for a second opinion, but that's the reason why I stayed. Moving along, I went for the endoscopy ultrasound. Actually, it was the same doctor that did back in April at the hospital. So I saw him again. I was there with my wife, and he got the results and everything. And then I finally got hooked up with the new surgeon.
So you did mention that your original surgeon was retiring. So when was it that you got to meet the new surgeon?
To meet the new surgeon, I'm trying to remember. I think it was before the end of the year. It was before the end of 2022. It might have been beginning of 2023, but I think it was before the end of 2022. And it was a video teleconference. We met. We spoke about, you know, he had obviously looked at the whole history of what was happening, the endoscopic ultrasound that was recently done and so on. He also explained to me why a total stomach removal was what needed to be done. It was better than a partial. So now basically I have like three opinions. I have the first surgeon who's retiring, who I really thought said partial back in May, but he was going with total, you know, when I saw him again later that summer. The surgeon from the other hospital in New York City said total. And now I have a third opinion, another doctor from the first hospital telling me to get total and so on. And it finally came together, clicked, it made sense why the whole stomach needed to be removed, even though the cancer had always been in the upper part of the stomach and it never spread. After three opinions, all of them saying the same thing and explained to me, it finally clicked. Okay, it makes sense.
I really commend you for advocating for yourself and getting more information about your options, getting a second opinion, and actually, which ended up being three opinions. So I know that that really helped you decide to go through with the surgery. So can you take me through what kind of thoughts and feelings were coming up leading up to it and then the day of the surgery?
Well, before the surgery, I had to go back based on my discussions with the new surgeon. He wanted me to do a procedure. It's called like a pitnal, I'm not sure, something wash. So I had to go back and they did it again and everything looked fine there. So we said, okay, now we're going to go ahead with the surgery. Prior to the surgery, I was trying to take care of a lot of personal things in my life because I didn't know how I was going to be after the surgery, what my life was going to be like and so on. Trying to take care of a lot of personal stuff. I had to go back and get a COVID test done. It was part of the procedures, you know, at the hospital. That came back negative and so on. Kind of similar to the chemo. I didn't know what to expect. I was concerned about the surgery because it's a major surgery. They're removing a major organ, you know, that I've had for, you know, since the day I was born. I was more concerned about what was going to happen once I woke up from the surgery, not the actual surgery. And I remember that morning going up there and checking in. It was like at 6 o'clock in the morning at the hospital, met with the surgeon. I had a lot of other questions that I had to ask, you know, of course, even before that day. I probably asked more questions than most other people will ask, you know, about a procedure, about test results and so on. That's the way I've always been, and I'm fine with that. So I met with the surgeon. I met with the other surgeon for the first time. He was also going to be in the room and so on. You know, they took my vitals, and I had to go weigh myself. It was like 201 pounds and so on, 201 point something. And, you know, when I got back from Florida approximately a year earlier, I was like around 230 pounds and so on. So, and I remember getting taken down the hallway to the room where they were going to do surgery. And I was fine. I wasn't freaking out or anything. Oh, you know, my blood pressure wasn't going up or anything like that. I wasn't like, oh, I'm getting out of here, you know. You know, I'm going to get on a plane and go visit my friend in Costa Rica or something like that. I was ready for this and so on. I had mentally prepared myself for this as best as you can under a situation like this. And I remember lying down on the table, and I remember saying two things before I went under. One, I asked what time it was, because I wanted to know what time it was, like when this is officially starting. And two, I said, Mom and Dad, get me Frutas. And the next thing I know, I woke up. I felt like I was under just for a couple of minutes, but this procedure was like approximately 4 hours. And the surgeon came in, he said, Ira, it was successful and so on. Your wife's outside, I'm going to speak to her, I'm going to take you over to the room. You know, later on, he's told me that the surgery is a sprint, Ira, but the recovery is the marathon.
And how long were you hospitalized after the surgery?
Well, the surgery was on February 24th. It was a Friday last year. And after the surgery, it's like anytime I, like the first day or two, I would cough or I would laugh. I really felt pain down there. And they gave me pain medication, and it worked. It started working. My wife was able to stay over. She stayed over one night. I had my own room. I was able to see the Empire State Building from the room. She had like a bed there, like a couch or something that opened up. And the first couple of days, I really wasn't able to eat. And they gave me like liquid foods. And then it was more thick, like soups and so on. But I was there until the following Thursday. And actually, they wanted me to leave the day before because there were like a few things that determine me being able to leave. One, me able to go to the bathroom and have a bowel movement. Two, being able to work with the mobility instructor, be able to walk around with a cane in the hallway. There was also tests, certain procedures that needed to come back a certain way and so on. And meanwhile, while I'm lying there, there's like this tube sticking out on the side of my abdomen. So during the day, people would come in and see me. The surgeon would come to see me almost every day. His team came in to see me. I had a very pleasant surprise when the oncologist came to see me and all that stuff. But I wanted to be out of there before March 4th. I did not want to be in the hospital. And the reason why I wanted to be out of there before March 4th was that was the anniversary of my father's passing. It had been the two-year anniversary. I did not want to be in the hospital on that day. And I was feeling better and all that stuff. They wanted me to leave the day before. And it was like, I don't know if I should leave, you know. You're first taking this tube out and everything. Maybe I should stay here another day. So I advocated for myself. And eventually they spoke to the insurance company. And the insurance company said, fine. And it's good that I advocated and didn't leave, because that tube they took out started leaking like a couple hours later. The nurse came in. If I remember correctly, it was a change of a shift. And she noticed it. I didn't even notice it. It was leaking. It was coming out. And she had to take care of it. It wasn't infected or anything. So by the time I left, I was eating some foods and so on, like some soups that were somewhat thick, you know, but I had to eat slowly and so on. Well, I met with a nutritionist while I was at the hospital, or maybe she was a dietitian. And it's like, you have to eat small meals, Ira, 6 or 7 meals a day. Can't be drinking liquids while you're eating. Here's the plan, you know, and this is like a plan on what you need to. These are the foods you can eat. These are the foods you should avoid eating. But then they wanted me, part of the discharge plan was to give myself injections. They didn't want me to have blood clots. And I was kind of skeptical about doing those shots myself. I said, I don't want to do that. I said, like, isn't there a pill or something? And they were kind of pushing it. And I was getting upset about it. And I said, I don't feel comfortable doing it. You could show me how to do it. I don't want to be doing that. And then I remember calling up a friend of mine. She's been a nurse for like over 20 years. And she's recommending these medications I could take instead. And then I told them about it. And to make a long story short, you know, after speaking to at least a couple of people, oh, yeah, that's a medication you could take. So they prescribed that medication and so on. And I remember leaving, and they gave me a cane. I didn't have my walker with me at the time. They gave me a cane, and I left. They took me downstairs. They got the medications and so on. And I remember seeing my wife later on that day, and I just, like, was crying. it was just like an emotional roller coaster, the surgery, the post-surgery, you know, the last couple of days, you know, advocating to make sure I didn't leave on that day. I stay an extra day. The blood clot injections, you know, fighting against doing that and ensuring that I get other medications instead of getting the shot. It was just an emotional roller coaster. And I didn't know what to expect. You know, I knew I was going to see the surgeon again in a few weeks. I knew I was going to see the oncologist again.
And when was your first follow-up appointment post-surgery?
It was approximately two weeks later and so on. I met with the oncologist and the surgeon. Blood work was done and they did a biopsy of all the stuff they took out, you know, the stomach and all these lymph nodes. There was approximately 30 lymph nodes that were taken out and everything came back negative. I was like, I think there was like a stage thing where I was like at the lowest stage at that point. Also, it was great news and everything. And at that point, first time, the oncologist wanted to do this extra blood work for me going forward, where my understanding was that it was like to see if there was any cancer, like in other parts of the body, like in the blood cells and so on. A few weeks later, I got those results back and they were negative. But the plan was that they were going to basically watch me like a hawk, even though they didn't use those words. Approximately every 6 months, I would go back and get a CAT scan with IV contrast to cover the abdomen, pelvis, and chest, because obviously it wasn't going to come back to the stomach, but it could come back some other way. And then every 3 months, I was going to get blood work done and meet with the oncologist and so on. So the marathon officially began. You know, it began when I left the hospital, but over the next several months, I started dropping weight.
I know that you had mentioned that losing weight was expected and it was a part of this experience, but I can imagine that you were also losing weight because it was difficult to eat. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
It was hard eating at first. You know, I've been a vegetarian for half my life, and it was a lot easier for me cutting out beef, chicken, and fish than trying to eat smaller meals. And I really haven't adhered to that. My eating habits are kind of erratic and all. So eating, I tried, you know, the small meals at first. I tried chewing a lot before swallowing. I avoided any beverages and so on. There were some situations, even though I never vomited when the chemo, there were a couple of times during the first few weeks after the surgery, I did have to throw up and so on. I wasn't feeling well. And then since then, it's been like, kind of like hit and miss. But I have been able to go back and eat most of the foods that I was able to eat beforehand, but I have to watch what I eat. Other times, things go through me very quickly because I don't have a stomach anymore. And they even cut a little bit part of the bottom part of the esophagus off during the surgery, and I'm running to the bathroom. Other times, I know it could be hours later when I have to go to the bathroom and so on. But I lost a lot of weight. I kept losing weight gradually over the last several months. Now, I expected that. I was told that was going to happen, so it was not a surprise in any way, shape, or form. But I'm hoping it's stabilized now.
I hope so, too. I know that weight loss can be a big challenge, especially with such a big adjustment. When was that first CAT scan post-surgery?
In order to say that, I mean, it was done in August of 2023. But prior to that, you know, I had gone back and see the oncologist after the initial visit with her and the surgeon in March. You know, back, I saw her, I think, like the end of May, and more blood work was done. And, you know, sometimes my potassium throughout the next several months was low, so I had to take some medication, you know, for three or four days, the prescription, you know, to bring it up and so on. My hemoglobin was okay, but they would do that extra blood work where they send it out to an outside lab. So in May and then in August, those came back negative also. So I get my first CAT scan with IV contrast, cover all those areas, abdomen, pelvis, and chest, which includes the kidney and liver and so on, in August, and came back negative. No evidence of the disease recurring and so on. And then that blood work, what I call the specialized blood work, also came back negative and so on. Then the plan was for me to go back to work about a month later, you know, at the beginning of October.
And as we get ready to wrap up this part, how do you feel about being in no evidence of disease? I know it's a tricky place to be.
Well, it feels good. Obviously, it's, you know, better than it being positive. But I'm cautiously optimistic because you hear stories about people, regardless of what type of cancer they have their surgeries, they have their procedures, and things are fine for a while, and boom, something happens later on. So I'm not letting it consume my life. I'm going out and doing things and so on, but I'm cautiously optimistic.
Well, I really appreciate that perspective and you sharing with us. And this is going to be the end of part one, but you can continue listening to Ira's story in the next part, where we really focus on Ira's survivorship and his support system and transition back to work. Join us next time on Cancer Out Loud. Thanks for tuning in to Cancer Out Loud, the Cancer Care Podcast. Cancer Care is the leading national nonprofit organization providing free professional support services, including resource navigation, cancer-focused counseling, support groups, educational resources, and financial assistance to anyone affected by cancer. You can visit us online at cancercare.org or call our toll-free HOPE line at 800-813-HOPE. That's 800-813-4673 to speak with a master's prepared oncology social worker.